called Guilt Trip. Our poet last week mentioned two names that sort of started this, and it was Anne Lovett and Eileen Flynn. And for those of you who are not familiar with the names, Anne Lovett was a 15-year-old schoolgirl. She died having her baby, and her baby also died in the 80s, outdoors. Eileen Flynn was a teacher who was sacked by the nuns because she was living in sin. In other words, she was living with an unmarried man, like they weren't married. Now, guilt trip. I took a guilt trip for a walk, and as I walked, it gathered thought. And with each step, it grew and grew until it got to this: what if? What if the church did not have sway over the masses and the state? Then would Anne Lovett still be here? Would Eileen Flynn still teach each year? Would women have been churched at all? Would Magdalens exist or no? Would mother-baby homes have spread? Would contraception needs be met? Well, then the guilt trip took a flip. What if the guilt was theirs, not ours? Hoist on their own petard are they. It is now time to make them pay. To right their wrongs, we must be strong, to rid us of this dirty throng. Their revelations fatal are. We'll strip them of their wealth et al. By now, from seething silently, we are the strong, they are the weak. We are no longer mild or meek. Repeal equality et al. The tide has turned, and power is ours. James Connolly, he got it right. For our demands, most moderate are. We only want the earth.
Thank you, Margaret. Next up is Owen Hurley.
So if my memory serves me correctly, this a much, much, much earlier, this earlier version of this poem was the first I ever read in O'Bale, but it's almost unrecognisable, but even some of you might recognise some lines. The world is the source from which we sort our thoughts to calculate to north and decisions, evaluate our course and our vision, choose fate and a cause with precision. But really, is this how we are living? Far across a deep schism of the mind, there be a beat, a rhythm, and a rhyme, without any formalism or any time. Who decides and defines the design of this side of the mind? There are cities of pity and seas of glee, seized by oceans of emotion ceaselessly. See, it seems to me his creed recedes to recesses. Indeed does he stress us, proceeds to re-guess us, and wheels and deals fields of fields as neat weapons, conceals his deep essence and shields his real presence beneath beliefs that we can reason rationally, impassionately. But this happens to be bollocks. A paper published in the Journal of Psychological Science in the year of 2000, titled Birds of a Feather Flock Conjointly, found that people believe statements to be more truthful if they contain rhyme or alliteration. See, us fools now know that evolution set the mold for these illusions of control that we assume we hold, just illusions, we are told. But what if these delusions are the cooings of the soul? Should we remove and defy the disguise through which we live our lives? Life's daily grind we see through our mind's eye. Who decides when to sympathize, synthesize, empathize, emphasize a feeling with this wheel he is weaving since we've been teething, leaving us teeming, beaming, or reeling? His power has no ceiling. This designer runs hot and cold. His plot follows no straight road. Of no fixed abode, he's got a hold on my soul and told me to stick, split, fold, or go toe to toe. So, if there are no shows ongoing, assume his looming looms are flowing, as soon, soon to be blooming seeds he is sowing, as soon, soon his booming moods will blow in, for in the absence of recent releases, I find his next piece may leave me in pieces. So here is my thesis. So hear now my thesis. Our very faults that are pernicious to reasoning are like salt, a delicious seasoning to give life flavor and good or bad favor, moments to savor, worth to stay for. We coast through life on a boat full of notions, buoyed by the winds of emotion. Attempts to be devoid of devotion to delusion's romantic potion is akin to paddling frantic with semantics across the Atlantic Ocean. Thinking is poison potent. The soul's core component is shown only in the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. Next up is Dan Johnson. Fishing with my uncle. In Colorado, when I was younger, my uncle, the outdoorsman, took me fishing in the creases of the mountains of Kremlin. We stepped down steep hillsides to find the secret slivers of streams about which he spoke with quiet, whispered confidence, like we were in church and another fisherman might be listening. These were places where fish hid in shady tabernacles, concealed in deep eddies. We slogged through mud and water, slapped endless mosquitoes, until he finally pointed out an armpit of creek and urged me sincerely, cast upstream, drop it in right there. So that's what I did. My bobber trickled down while I gave it gentle flicks, tempting the silver flashes below to meet the earthworm and their end. In the swirling eddy, lightning struck. My uncle helped the rod. With a deft flick of the wrist and elemental glee in his eyes, he yanked the trout onto the bank. You've just got to know where to find them. I still search for the eddies, that silver moments call home, hoping to flick them with my uncle's ease onto the dry banks of the page, their scales glistening with the freshness of life.
Is Jim Krikard. So I only sort of read this last night and kind of finished it today, and it's about 7 years ago when I was in college and I was going through a hard time. I was but I kind of, there's distance from it, so it's kind of easier to write about, and I actually find bits of it funny, and I enjoy this, and I think it's, I hope you enjoy it as well. It's kind of funny. Remember when that summer swallowed you into the couch of your dad's house and your bank account was a torched forest from nights out after those final exams you somehow managed to pass, although your heart was shattered by a boy the night before? Remember that weird pen from the ESB with steps on electrical hazards that you noticed inside the exam? How they were weirdly relevant to the weight of heartbreak in an exam when you've drank your grant and slept through lectures and faced ancient philosophy with a vague acquaintance of Plato? How that oracle pen from the ESB gave you such serenity when you clicked the ballpoint out and the pen told you what to do with the sparks of broken power lines flailing around inside your mind? Create an exclusion zone. Meant delete his name from your brain. Resurface the road parallel to the hazard meant pave a way around the heartbreak. Don't panic if you come in contact with an overhead electricity line meant let your thoughts of him flail in the ditches. How they calmed you down inside the exam hall, and the months rolled by on the couch of your dad's house and you wrote vengeful poetry that you showed nobody. How you never heard the right words from your father and complained about him to strangers in a self-help course. How you opened the results at the end of the endless summer and wondered if you owed your bachelor's degree to the ESB. whether you should send them a letter to say thanks for saving you from the weight of parental expectations. How years rolled by and it fell into the inconsequential debris. How you unfolded the debris 3 years later and blew the dust off, and particles flew around the sunlight of the present moment, and none of it mattered in the end. But oh, how it all mattered then.
Molly Toomey.
Hey. Five-word champ.
Our five-word champion.
Thank you. Eve. He says his ex is crazy. That she tried to touch him in his sleep. That she gave him bits. Refused to scratch his back. Wash his feet. Now she's in a cave by the Red Sea. And if you listen closely, you can hear her moan under another man's hips. I think about her when he flaps on my skirt. He says she pinned him to the earth, that she'd rather die than spend another second as his wife. But every day I listen to her bury another child, her pain coming out in shrieks, and Adam complaining he can't sleep, calling her a sex pest as he spreads my legs like a rack of ribs. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. Next is Henry Glass.
About another 6 inches of that, sorry. Yeah, no, I don't usually do introductions, but I had a manager there in kind of near past who kind of noticed a few things and basically said it was a hassle to employ people with disabilities and they weren't tough enough to work in construction. And it's not at all in my nature to lose a fight, so I kept my job, but backed him down. But having to use the word disabled in relation to myself was rather annoying. And I wrote this poem as a result of it in the time. But yeah, to be described as a workplace burden is demeaning. But I was dumbfounded when my manager broke the news. When my manager, my employment was not worth the hassle for my difficulties in this day and age. But I'll be damned if I'm called disabled. I denounced that title the day I denied those that doubted me, even the right to judge me. But some have to use that label just to define, in simple terms, everything I am. I loathe that term. I am on level, proportionate to my peers, and only sometimes I have to make twice the effort. And still, some don't get it. I'm the challenge to the stereotype, the one you don't expect. I still disdain your title. I only want respect. To live in quiet dignity is the only thing I ask. To do right representing my community, because we are not a title, more than a name, and not a simple definition.
Next up is Patricia Walsh.
The inspiration of this poem comes from 1997, having a nervous breakdown. And the push came to solve, I snapped when I was at home with my friends. And my friends weren't too forthcoming. There was one girl who said she'd never forgive me for ruining her night out. And then there was another guy who said, well, you never lived with fingers, you never lived in Ballymore, so why right have you to be depressed? So this is about something that. This is blood orange. Well deserved kick in the innards. Pointing atmosphere at every coffee break. Theorizing night to light from dingy abuse. A rare smile over painting remains by. Preserving entertaining over coffee scene. Prescribed alcohol in a hypocritical stance. Congregating like fools outside lessons. Wearing ears with purpose, hidden away askance. The remainder says just go home. Joining disgrace, too much to ask. Precious undertakings blowing every mind. Hygienic exceptions catch your still blood. No house-trained creature can stop me now. Watching the imaginary detectives mill about. Closing times picked and chosen at Foreign Office. Close to an enemy, sitting down and will. Unwrapping derision in a thoughtful place. Guarding invitations in the ultimate prize. Kiss ponderous to happy contour. Self-satisfaction living no purpose. Hypnotized situations and obvious misery. Rejoicing to satiety for a welcome glitch. Boring mouths and coffee, a feat no longer celebrated. Root to heart hearts, credit prize no further. Thanks.
Thank you, Patricia. Next up is Elaine Lombard.
I just wrote this poem. I do welcome technology, but I also think there's a little bit being lost as well with technology. And this is what has come out. Encompassed in a virtual world which constantly seeks approval, a rapidly informative world for our perusal. Futuristic technology, we are told, but losing our time and gold. Can we not accept the natural thing and reject the intricate cascade of interjected unsolvable extremities? It is quality time we require, or we will expire to the clouds of lost information that surrounds us, invisibly. Virtual conversation replacing human interaction. Disengage a fraction. Avoid the distraction, for reality exists. Experience the bliss.
Next is Anna Hall.
No. It's hard to decide which read, but called playing with cutlery. Part of me dissolves, water with sugar, made sweet, you'd think. Time I look around as now I see, a sip I've never taken, nothing left to me. I'm empty, let me grieve. If you wait, I'll happily allow another gulp, my sweet. You know I'm happy. I just wonder, looking up at a massive tunnel, quite impairing a hole. Who do I care about? A telescope, room for one, two, three? Don't heed what I've told you in my hole, my tunnel, its opposite day. But you let me grieve, and you let me be. Nothing more when you came to drink, but are you surprised? I said nothing of April Fools. So the fool is me. How wistful should I be? After all, a cup was made to drink, and that's what I am. Not but a tiny peak, not for me. And I'm full now to the brim. So let it, no object can seem grim. Anyway, no reason to be not sweet. Must be the echoes in my curved walls of being, being, being. Walls, funny I see walls. That which you'll never see inside, a chance I have still with my telescope. Just step aside, to side, a wall, a drip, drip, gush, ah, my call to be what I am again for you all. I do love you all. Can you love a cup? Well, that's just silly. No, there's no need. We're simple, here to please. And I don't mind, I love you still. Be still until again I'll feed you with your tender greed. I love you still. Without you I would just be a plastic hole. And what use is that? What use is that? Useless. Use me. Oh, you already have, but I take it back, and so we're back. I still love you, now empty. Can you taste the change between my sweet, my sour, bitter? I suppose what difference does it make? I'll just exist, and we'll see or not see what I am tomorrow. 10 a.m. sharp. Are you coming? Of course you are. I'll give what is expected, a thank you. I'll mean and be silent then, as she should always cast. Amen.
Thank you, Anna. Next is Philip's plan.
Your talking touch caresses and pushes my muscles on certain points and special places down my back, holding my hair and nuzzling behind my ear. I tried to match, but I can only whisper poetry into your ear. Something about crossroads, and you can go wherever you want to go. Our holes were a schedule on your timetable. When you talked, it sounded professional, impersonal, important. Like my counselor, I was part of your time. Then the second time around, the hands made conversation with my skin. I knew then it was not lust. You were letting me go. Thanks.
Our last reader of the open mic tonight is Sue Blue.
I thought I'd end on a love poem, and I'm going to do it in German first, because this is one of the rare gems that came in German first. Und am Silbermond. Und wie oft sehe ich mit sehnsuchtsvollem Blick hinauf zu deinem Fenster unterm Silbermond, wo schon dein süßer Körper warm in Kissen ruht, wenn voll Verlangen erst in mir die Nacht erwacht. Zu mancher Stunde, wenn das Mondlicht durch das Dunkel zieht und mich die Dichtermuse in den Schreibwahn bannt, verzehren meine zarten Fühlerzellen sich vor Sehnsucht nach Berührung deiner sanften Hand. Und meine Sinne wandern weiter deine Flanken lang, bis mit ersehntem Beben ich, wenn meine Nacht getan, mich leis an deine weichen Kurven schmiegen kann und selig unterm Silbermond in Schlaf entschwinde. Und mein Verlangen wartet auf die nächste Nacht. Under the silver moon. And how often am I looking up with longing gaze to your window high above under the silver moon, where your sweet body lies already in the warm duvets, when inside me with desire now the night awakes. In many hours when the moonlight travels through the dark and the muse of poems binds me in a writing trance, my tender feeler cells are all consumed in longing for the touch from your gentle hands. and my senses wander further down along your flanks, until with yearning quiver, when my night is done, I quietly can nestle to your supple curves at last, and disappear in bliss to sleep under the silver moon, and my desires waiting for another.
We'll have another big round of applause for everyone on the open mic. And then for our guest poet, Michelle O'Sullivan. Woo!